James and Matthew discuss Apple, Microsoft, BlackBerry, and overly descriptive titles in episode 92 of the Furla Bros Tech Podcast.
Episode 92 of the Furla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June 30th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furla, and this is my world away brother, James Furla.
That's right, I am a world away.
Yeah, wow. Pretty much. Well, not really.
It's only 8 hours. That's
a third of a world?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in Lincoln, England, broadcasting live from the shores of the UK, the United Kingdom.
I got
here all week.
Nice. And so, are you in your hotel right now? Is that where you are?
Yes, sir. So those like weird refracting lights that you're looking at if you're watching this live broadcast are my hotel lights. I don't really know how to turn them off without turning off everything. So they're on.
Is London the way you remember it from your childhood days?
To be totally honest, I don't actually know that I stepped foot in London. I like stepped out of Heathrow Airport and into a car, and we were on the freeway within 10 seconds, and it's all like high brush and stuff. I mean, like, I don't remember.
You're on the wrong side of the road, right?
Of course, yes.
Correct. Okay. The left side?
But, right. One thing I do want everyone to be well aware of is right now it's 9:23 for me in England, but what time is it for you?
It's 1:23,
and I have not actually slept since 6 a.m. yesterday morning. I got in about 11 hours ago and decided to just kind of tough it through it for one reason or another.
So you didn't sleep on a plane very much?
No, not at all. I didn't get a blink. I tried and just couldn't get it to happen. And
man, that's tough. You were on Delta, right?
Yeah, I was on Delta. I had a layover in JFK.
What was that picture of, by the way? I didn't understand it.
Yeah, so I Instagrammed a picture of the window that I had. I was sitting at the emergency exit door.
I saw that.
Of the plane. And that window is it's a little prism that they put into the window or into the door so that you can see through it. And it's just this tiny little nothing of a window. It was kind of weird to see everything through. I had a terrible position for like actually seeing stuff out the whole trip. It's so funny. I wear sandals when I fly because I wear sandals everywhere. And it has nothing to do with flying. And I got that seat and I was like, oh yeah, man, I can totally be at the emergency door. Like we get into an emergency situation, I'll be the man. I'll like save people's lives. It's going to be awesome. And all of a sudden I started realizing that I got sandals on. Like this is going to be rough, man, because either you're going to like crash into the Atlantic and it's going to be a water thing, in which case my feet are going to freeze, or it's going to be like you're going to hit ground, in which case there's going to be fire and explosions, and then I'm going to like burn and cut my feet, and that'll be awful. And I started to say this out loud to the guy that was sitting next to me. He's a pretty nice dude. And he just laughed at me and said, don't worry. If we get in an accident, everybody's going to die. Well, that's...
Jeez.
That's dark.
Don't worry about it.
Kind of helpful, I guess. I stopped worrying about it after that.
I used to also, and I'm going to past tense, used to travel very, very light as well, like shorts, t-shirt. I don't think I did the sandals thing. I think I actually had real shoes. And I was on Delta, and I was a flight to Germany, which got sidetracked to Labrador, Canada at 2 a.m. because of issues. And when I left, it was nice out. And when I was get to Germany, it was supposed to be nice out. But at 2 a.m. in Canada, it was cold and rainy and horrible. And I had shorts and a t-shirt, and I was there for a little over, for a little under, about 24 hours. That was miserable. There was one time where I was sleeping on the cafeteria of a military base in Labrador, Canada, and I had an airplane blanket, and I was resting on top of my backpack for a pillow, and I was just like, this is miserable.
Yeah, this that sounds terrible.
So now I actually pack a jacket with me just in case, because you never know when you're going to get stranded in the middle of nowhere for a day.
That's a good point. And the hop across the pond, the emergency route is always Greenland, which for those of you that are familiar with the irony in geography, Greenland isn't green. It's pretty icy. I won't pack my jacket. I'll probably bring my jacket with me on the way back, just in case.
Now that's cool. You're in London doing a tech podcast.
It's true. It's speaking of tech podcasts. you're gonna find it so easy to get me distracted and just kind of. So right now I'm operating on caffeine and nothing else. So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, where hopefully we'll talk about technology and not other random stuff that my brain gets onto, James has a short disclosure.
Yes, I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Boom. That's awesome. If you want to follow us throughout the week, check out all of our interesting thoughts and pictures as we travel around the world and makes observations and jokes and complain about humidity in New York and such things. You are more than welcome to go to our social media places. The big one is our Twitters. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow, one word, all lowercase.
And I'm technically at James Furlow, but I would say I'm experimenting, trying it out. And so you can also check out jamesfurlow.tumblr.com, which if the internet plays along correctly, that will soon get rid of the .tumblr part.
Nice.
It's just a matter of time, I think, assuming I changed all my C and A names correctly. I think it'll work, but you know, it takes time, so it's kind of like you change something, then you have to wait 72 hours to see if it worked.
The whole DNS domain name servers where they point.
Yeah, well, it's one level above that, so I don't have to change the DNS stuff. It's just the A name, whatever. It's technical garbage. Doesn't matter. But I'm trying it out as a new landing spot.
Cool.
Because then I have it, so that's like the feed of stuff, right? Thoughts about the show, photos of my life, whatever. And then on the About Me section, I'm actually using about.me/James Furlow, which has more information, more resume-ish type thing. But if you want the official resume, you just go to LinkedIn because it's all there, including, I've uploaded some media up to a couple places. Like for this podcast, I uploaded our cover photo. I was like, yeah, this is us.
Seriously, and if you just Google James Furlow, that's
actually the easiest way to do it. So,
seriously,
there it is.
If you want to look at talking about the landing strip of websites, the landing strip of this show and all this other content, you can travel the surf the links all around it. It's furlowbros.com. We put all the links and clicks for the show, any videos we talk about, all the podcast cuts, which are bite-sized pieces of the show, the entire show, cool pictures, all sorts of fun stuff there at the website. So you can go and check that out, and it'll give you everything you need and want to know about the show.
So, stuff happened this week. I know.
True.
It's kind of amazing. It just keeps happening.
I know. Every week, man. It's like,
There will probably be less stuff next week, which is good for you.
I know.
Because there's an American holiday that you won't participate in coming up.
Are you kidding me?
Anything you're just gonna upset.
Oh, you haven't seen this yet. This is a This is an exclusive, unless you're on my Snapchat, in which case you've probably already seen it. But this is what I'm wearing on Thursday. As I'm proud to be an American,
oh
where at least
that's
I know
horrible.
I am free.
It is. Is that a polo shirt or a button-up?
It's a button-up shirt.
Button-up shirt that's an American flag.
It's obscenely red,
that
white, and blue.
Is horrible.
Oh my gosh! And it's got a denim collar.
I hope
that's
you
my
get
favorite
beat up.
Part. I want to get in a fight so bad, and I'm going to get in a fight. I'm going to be like, I'm bringing the revolution to your shore.
You're the reason why they hate us.
I know. It's going to be awesome. They're going to be like, what are you celebrating? They're not even going to know. What's the 4th of July?
Oh, they'll know.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Have you ever lost a football game? You'll know. They know.
They're well aware of what it means.
That's a hard one to let go.
Yeah.
Okay, so you... Wow. All right.
I'm so excited. Thursday's going to be awesome.
Speaking of being over-the-top excited, Microsoft had their own little moment today.
Oh, yeah?
This week. Yeah. So they I went to their blog to talk about a new feature of Windows 8.1, and that is Internet Explorer 11!
Yeah.
And I just love how dedicated they are to IE. They were like, I don't even know if I can fully give it justice, but they were like, it's the bestest, most amazingest thing ever created in human history. Ever! With a little asterisk for Windows 8 Touch. Which
yeah.
We happen to be the only ones developing for. And, I mean, they're just like, it's got immersive browsing. It's touch optimized. I mean, it's seriously like the best browser, touch responsiveness, and battery life on Windows devices. Touch optimized address bar. As many tabs as you want. More beautiful, touchable favorites. Navigation built for touch. Your sites first. And it keeps going. Creative live site tiles in Windows 8.1 start screen. Modern web development is easier. Hardware accelerated 3D web graphics. The existing web continues to work even better.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah, they're like, it's the best web experience with apps and sites together. It totally reminds me of, you know, those, you didn't play softball, but, or I didn't play softball either. Baseball.
Baseball.
Yeah, you're right. You did. But you remember those parents who were like, my kid's the best. He's perfect.
Yeah.
Can make no mistakes ever. When everyone knows that kid is a total jerk. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, that's what our parents said about me, but it wasn't an exaggeration.
Okay. Nice. Nice. But it kind of reminds me of that, where they're just like, my kid's the best ever. It's so much better than your kid, and everyone should know it. And you're just like, guys, it's okay. We get it. It's your baby, so you love it. But really?
So I feel like the problem that I have, and this is going to sound ridiculous. I mean, everybody who's listening to the show right now is being like, you guys are such Apple fanboys. What do you think Apple Steve Jobs did every time he got on stage? And I'm going to say this. Yes, this is the exact same playbook. It really is. I mean, like, there's no difference in strategy here. This is the greatest thing.
Yeah, but Jobs said it with a smile, not a blog.
Well, what I was going to say is, it wasn't the fact that he said it, and it wasn't the fact that it was just ridiculous over the top, and then he's like, you know, this is gonna change everything again. Because now we've got an LED.
The iPhone 4?
Yeah.
Everything all over again. Like, real.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just like, you guys are being a little bit exaggerating too much. I don't know. But what I think is the difference is I always got the feeling that it was a little bit that Apple didn't say it tongue in, or it was like half tongue in cheek, half serious, and like with like the full intensity of like reality. They would never back down from that position that it's the greatest thing ever and it's truly magical and wonderful. Even though it's like their verbiage was so over the top that there's just no way that like any of them actually thought that. It was just. But they were, like, fully committed to it. And so there's they have this like force of just testicular magnitude, for lack of a better word, in how they look at it. And whereas like and the fact that they just did it with such force and like, yeah, that's what we're saying. And just like they do the stare down on you, like, yeah, it's true. This is great. Greatest thing that's ever happened ever. And
yeah,
and they used
to do stuff too, where I mean, they would give similar caveats, where it would be like, this is the thinnest phone that happens to be smart running iOS.
Right. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta be number one in something. You know, it's just a
exactly.
It's all well, how you slice it. Of course, what I also loved about Apple was they would like they did this with Mavericks, right? Where I should say they did it first with Mountain Lion, where they were just like, "This is the best thing ever. We have solved life, and you will download it and you will love it." And then like in Mavericks, they're like, "Okay." There were a bunch of hugely annoying, horrible things about Mountain Lion, and we fixed them all to create the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, and they point out all these flaws. We're like, yeah, that really was annoying, actually. I hated that. But it was really cool like a year ago, and now it's like horribly annoying. But you solved it, so it's all good. And
that is the best thing that they do, is that they just like that they come back. I'm like, yeah, the last version was awful, man.
Yeah, it was horrible. We can't believe you actually bought that.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. It's just the force of will on that whole attitude. IE doesn't have that. It's almost like they take themselves too seriously about it, and not seriously enough at the same time. Whereas Apple took themselves so seriously that it's ridiculous that it was just not serious. It's just like...
Part of it is, you know, they played on the whole snobby thing. Oh, you're running last gen? Wow. and they played that up, and that was part of the fun of it. That still is part of the fun of it. Whereas Microsoft is more like, I don't know what's the... It comes more off as just clueless, I guess, where, you know, they're not trying to be the snobs. They're the, this is a device, this is a... or you know, this is an operating system for all devices, all people, all the time. And it's almost like, how do I want to say it? And they don't apologize for previous things. You know, they're not like, oh yeah, that was horrible. Yeah. Like, no, that was amazing. And now this is amazing plus.
Right.
I don't know.
I think what it is is it's a conflict of messages. They set two different tones. The tone here is, like you said, and maybe this is the best way to put it, the tone is that of snobbiness and amazingness and just, you know, it's the greatest thing ever, and it's, you know, you should be spending all of your money to buy this. And then at the same time, the overall tone of the product is, no, this is for the middle class, everybody can afford it, it's a tool, and that's kind of and maybe that's not the tone they're trying to set, but that's the perception. And so you end up in this weird place where that message, that tone, doesn't meet the rest of the tone of the company. And whereas, you know, from a marketing perspective,
I feel like they also have this struggle with deciding what's important and what's not. I mean, I get it. They'd put it in a blog post instead of pulling everyone together for an announcement. Because that'd be a little weird. But even then, it's like, dude, just update it. And I don't know. There's something about it where it's like with Apple, they will tell you like the top 7 or 10 cool things about it and then kind of let you hunt and discover the rest of it.
Yeah.
Whereas Microsoft feels compelled to tell you everything.
Yeah.
And they just do that laundry list. And the way that the laundry list is made is all full of superlatives. Instead of just tell me what it has, just tell me the features. They're like, no. It's amazing because it's a PR thing and we have to say it's amazing. And you're like, no, it's okay. It's just a browser. Mm-hmm. It's all right. Yeah. We've made it faster, better. I mean, and you think about like, I know that Apple Safari has... you know, it's supposed to be new and they got like notifications or something, but it was like, oh yeah, we updated Safari and it's got notifications.
Yeah.
Okay, moving
on.
It was very quick.
They don't have the finesse that Apple has for that kind of a message.
Yeah, well, they don't have Phil Schiller.
Right. Yeah, that's the big problem. And you know what? You know what the other problem is actually, and this one I think is probably the biggest problem.
I love bashing Microsoft. Go ahead.
I think the biggest problem that Microsoft is really running into is that they're trying to convince you that Internet Explorer is not terrible.
Come on, it's not. Well, it depends. Which one are you running? The one in the new UI, whatever that's called. I still can't remember. In the start area, or
it's not Metro anymore, dude. I can't even remember. It's not the RT. It's the new UI. What the heck is the new UI?
No, that's not it. That was their problem, man. They had an awesome brand and had to give it up.
Yeah.
Whoever owned it, I would have paid them whatever money they asked for. Give me $1 billion. Okay.
Yeah, I think it would have been worth it. I think they should have strong-armed it. They thought they could get away. They had just classic, you know, they had a great marketing. But that Apple, but Microsoft does it all the time. They come out with these great, like, you know, the Kinect, before it was called the Kinect. I get why you call it the Kinect. It's not a terrible name in that it's like,
it's about movement and
kinetics. Wait, I'll get there. It's like that combination of that whole kin prefix that they go, like, kinship, yeah. So you're like all doing it together. You've got kinetics, you've got connecting, like actual physical. There's a bunch of different things that they're putting together, and it's like it matches all of their different things, but it just seems so contrived. Where before that, it was the code name for it was Nepal. And Natal was like city in Spain or something. And it just sounded really cool and unique and different. And like, yeah, it's the Natal technology. It's great. And I don't know. I shrug my shoulders and they sit there and they go, they come up with these cool marketing terms, or not marketing terms, they're inside terms that really sound cool. And then they come up with their marketing terms that just feel like they were pressed out of a spaghetti machine. Like, a sausage machine is it better? You know, just take a bunch of terms, ground it up, and it comes out. It's pretty good. You know, I like sausages as much as the next guy, but it's no steak.
I know that HP suffers from a similar issue where, for example, every single product has to have a number in it. Every single product name has to have a number. And, if you look at your HP laptop, it's got a number sitting on it somewhere. If your printer has a number, whatever else we make, servers, which you would never see, has a number. Even the slate, they call it, it's a slate 7 to indicate the size of the screen.
Yeah.
But there's another number. That's the short name. It has another name with a number associated with it.
That's the nickname. That's funny.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the weird ones where they didn't give it. I should say normally what HP does is they give them highly descriptive names, or something that you're just like, what? Like with our printers, oftentimes they're like, it's the Inkjet Office Pro 3000 billion zillion WNQ, and those numbers at those letters at the end indicate whether it's got networking, wireless, or quantum computing. You know, they say what they are, which means something to engineers and marketers.
Yeah.
Means nothing to customers at all. And I don't know. It's just so HP does that, and so they tend to be very descriptive style names. As a result, and that was what made the Elite Pad and the Slate different, in my opinion. They came out and they gave them semi-cool names. You're like, oh, wow, that's all right. I know what that is. I can call it that. I can say it. But that's only part of the name. There's more to it, and there's a point behind this. Oh, yeah, and all of HP's products have what we call lab names as well, where it's this – you know, it's this name that we give so that we can talk about it before it's been given its official name, which are often awesome. And what's super cool about it, especially in like the printer stuff, is typically you'll have a family of printers, you know, where it's just one generation after another where they're slowly improving and making them better, that are all done by the same engineering group, and the engineering group gets to name it. and gets, oh, nice. Gets the name, the lab name, I should say. And so you'll have, like, we have this one series where it was like Yoda, Wookiee, Jedi, Vader, which you obviously can't turn those into real names. We had another one where it was like Legolas, and did we have a Frodo?
Awesome.
I don't feel like we had a Frodo. But we had a wizard's name. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm failing.
Dumbledore?
No, no. I don't think we have a Dumbledore.
Ganondorf.
It starts with a G, doesn't it? What's his name?
Ganondorf.
No, that's Legend of Zelda.
I'm just going to let this one.
Gandalf. There we go. I got it. So anyways, we had... I don't think we had a Frodo. That would have been cool. But anyways, we have a Gimli, which is actually, that one's cute because some of our printers, we have different product lines, and one of our product lines is an LY. And so oftentimes they just attach that to the end of it. And so they called it Gim. And so when you read it, yeah, you're like, oh, I get it. Cute. And, it's like some of those URLs where they find some regular.com ending and do it. So, so that was what they did. We're like, that's cute. I like it. And, but those are fun. Obviously cannot be called that in the real world for copyright reasons. But they're cool and they're fun. And I would love to see that kind of creativity go with, you know, a more external facing one, but I don't know. In some ways, if you think about like Apple, there's a boring eye. They're like, oh, what is this? It's a phone. Okay. We'll put an eye in front of it.
Yeah, iOS, iPhone.
Oh, what is this?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
it's just
true.
Like a, it's a pad.
Well, but wait a second. That's unfair. That's unfair. If you look at the line of, you know, OS X, it was all kind of lion names or big cat names, and now they've moved to places in California. I mean, they're cool enough. They come up with cool names. Yeah, sometimes they come up with like dumb names.
I guess
names
those technically still have the numbers behind them.
Yeah, it's OS X 10.7 or whatever they're up to, 8. But it's, you know, I don't know. I hate when they come up with come up with like really great names, they release the names, they let everybody talk about the names, and then they pull the great names. This, how did we even get Metro Design? Wow, we are so far off topic.
It's okay.
It's true, but it's, I don't know, it's...
So anyways, I do not own a Windows 8 machine, unfortunately. Yeah. And I came really close to getting an HP ElitePad. I actually wanted one, but alas, it was not in the cards.
What for?
I could probably talk about this. So as you know, I went to HP Discover and they had a little competition thing where if you uploaded photos to Instagram or Twitter and you tagged them in a specific way, it would enter you into a competition. Yeah. And one of the prizes that you could win was an ElitePad. I didn't win that prize.
Honestly, everything I've heard about the Slate would suggest that if I could get one for free, I'd really, really enjoy it. I'm just not going to pay that much for one.
What I did win.
Wait, what?
So it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks for me to get it. But so I could win either a Slate or an ElitePad. And I didn't get the ElitePad.
Wait. So no. Not you. So you won the Slate. I meant the Surface.
Oh.
Right. The correct. XP Pro Surface. Or not XP Pro. Windows 8
wow.
Pro Surface.
The RT version or the... No, you said Pro.
Pro. And I guess my point is to say I'm sure the XP or the... I'm sure the HP version is also likewise a really nice, capable device. And, you know, if you could get it for free, it'd be fun to play with. And I'm sure the Slate will feel the same way. Slate runs RT, right? That's the difference.
Wait. I'm sorry.
Don't go with RT.
The Slate runs Android. Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, right. I knew
that. Yeah.
Oh, so what the heck? Did I hate you?
I actually like HP's ElitePad because it's a 10-inch screen, similar to the Surface. Right. I think it's a little thicker than the Surface, but it also has a good build feel to it. And I've played with it, and it's pretty nice. What's really cool about it is HP is making a whole bunch of, what do they call, you know, accessories, I guess. So, like, some cases, but they're not like regular cases. Like, one of them is a battery expansion case. One of them is a port expansion case. And then you can even dock it with a docking station, which gives you the keyboard and the mouse and an external monitor, gives you an Ethernet connection if you want it, some other stuff, which is really cool for, you know, if you're using it for business related stuff. And I know there's a lot of people within HP where it's like you're doing regular work, which requires, you know, you to have the full horsepower and, you know, maybe Excel work. That's a good example. But then you have a lot of meetings that you go to as well, and it's nice to just pick it up, and you're not bringing your whole laptop. You just got that, you know. So it's cool. It's cooler than the Surface in, you know, in that regard, that it's got all those accessories, and it doesn't have the little kickstand, so you're not forced a certain angle on it. You can actually get which I'm sure you can get a case for the Surface, but...
That's
cool. It's cool.
Nice.
I like it.
Speaking of cases,
nice.
So there's an interesting case law that's been going on with Tesla recently. I hope you don't mind me changing the topic.
No, man, make it happen.
That was an awesome
transition. I approve.
Thank you. I just wanted to give everybody a quick update on what's going on in the world of the electric car. Tesla wants to sell direct to consumers, and traditional dealers hate that because they've had a lock on the market, and they're afraid that if companies can start to sell things online, you know, GM and Chrysler and all those guys and Ford and Japan. What are those Japanese companies called?
Japanese
Toyota and Mitsubishi's. You know, they can all sell direct to the consumer online, cut out all the middleman stuff, and it might cut into profits of the highly profitable dealerships. And since dealerships drive a huge amount of tax money for local towns and stuff, there's a lot of political will to preserve them, but this is running into direct conflict with Tesla's strategy of being too small to have dealerships. So they want to sell direct to consumers, and North Carolina was one of the big early battlegrounds that they had to go to, because North Carolina was trying to pass a bill that would make it illegal for Tesla to sell direct to consumers.
Right.
Basically, what was going on? What's up?
Oh, you got quiet all of a sudden.
Okay.
You're back.
So basically, what happened was Elon Musk drove on over to North Carolina and took the governor and the leader of the House reps out for test drives in the Tesla, and they're like, "Yeah, this is really cool. We want our people to be able to drive these." And so even though the North Carolina Senate passed the bill to make it illegal, the House and the governor were like, "Nope, we're going to let them sell them."
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. So Tesla will be able to sell direct to consumers in North Carolina. There's this big petition on the federal level to try to make it so that there's a federally regulated allowance to do that, which I come back to, why not let the states figure it out? But that's more political than we need to get into for most days.
Remember, you're only like international politics.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. And this is a good week for politics. Oh, boy.
A couple things happen.
SCOTUS. Oh, man. They're getting crazy. And what's funny is, like, all of my I can't start because I won't know how to stop once my mouth gets moving.
What was this? Speaking of this, what was – I'm curious about the spaceship thing. What was that?
Oh, I hate California politics.
Just an aside. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is I had an article. It's called I hate California politics, and it sounds like the spaceship's not going to happen. The Apple spaceship that.
What?
I know. And the reason for it is basically there are so many regulations within Palo Alto and California at large that they do not think that they'll be able to build the big circular spaceship and meet all the regulations. And so they hired this lawyer to basically come back and give them, like, these are our three options. And, like, one is to make the changes that you want, which won't make it work. Two is to build, like, a really drab building that's just huge and more traditional, which Apple hates the idea of doing because it's Apple. Then they're like, they have an option of, like, making a smaller campus and making expansion places other places, which won't bring all their people together, or building entirely new campuses somewhere else where they could really set up shop, which is basically to say, move Apple out of California. And so they're trying to play, it sounds like they're playing a game of chicken with Palo Alto, saying, how about y'all figure out how to let us do this or we're going to leave?
Cupertino or Palo Alto? Where is it? It's in Cupertino, isn't it?
Cupertino, sorry, yeah. That's what I meant. It's like basically the same place.
Wow. So despite all of the, this is going to be awesome, let's go do it. Yeah. It's like...
Well, you know, it's classic California politics. And what drives me nuts is it's like, if y'all haven't been following our bullet train debacle, which if you haven't been, good for you. but the bullet train debacle is crazy because it's like, number one, you know, everybody's like so stoked about, oh my gosh, you know, we're gonna build a bullet train. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be so fast. And it's not. The bill has changed so much where the train's never gonna get above like 80 the whole way. It's got like 12 stops. It's gonna take 7 hours to get from San Francisco to LA. It's gonna cost twice as much as a plane ticket. Take three times as long. It's so ridiculous. It's one of the craziest things that's going on. It's going to cost billions and billions of dollars. And the biggest thing is that they're having to suspend a bunch of the environmental regulations in order to let it happen to begin with. And the environmental lobby's like, what are you doing? Like, those are there for a reason. Like, you don't get to just, as the government, you don't just get to ignore that because this is your pet project. Yes. And yet they're going forward with it, and they're fighting the environmental lobby, and they're able to basically not uphold the laws that they're supposed to uphold in order to build these trains. And then when they look at Apple, they're like, well, but you guys should toe the mark on these laws because this isn't my pet project. So, yeah. It just is so crazy. And they're going to drive Apple out of California. It's like Los Gatos, the city that you and I grew up in. They're so lucky that Netflix decided to play ball with them because Netflix was on the verge of leaving and was going to take all of the tax revenue for the giant multinational internet corporation with them, and they were just going to move to Campbell. They were going to move down the road and get just is like literally like a block because they're right on the border. And it just is so stupid. These people are so dumb. Sometimes you're like, you guys got to. I mean, obviously, I'm not in favor of pillaging the environment for the sake of building pretty buildings, but I think that there's a place in between those two extremes that maybe we could all talk and figure out how to make it happen. But nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares in California. We can't even get our government to defend our laws. I'm about to.
All right. Got it. I understand the situation. Cool. So Tesla.
So in other news, so the other cool part is Fiat is building the Fiat 500, pretty cool little car. Everybody seems to like it. They built an electric version of the car, and they're selling it in California, and they sold out of them. They built it specifically for California because they're only dealing with Californian regulations, and they talk about there's like three phases. The first was to release it in California. The second was to release it into states that have very similar regulations as California. There's like 14 of them that they identified. And then the last phase would be to make a model that could drive in all states like the Tesla. But there just seems to be everybody, the problem with the Fiat is it's not Motor Trend's car of the year. made by the amazing Mr. Elon Musk, so I don't know why you'd want one. But there's obviously a lot of demand for electric cars and
how much
and, you
are
know,
they?
Growing demand. I don't actually know how much the
Fiat. Oh, here we go. Means. We got the Nissan Leaf 21.3, seats 5, looks like they're all 5. The Honda Fit EV is 37.4. Ford Focus is 39.2. Tesla is 84.9. There's a bunch of Tesla ones. Another Nissan Leaf. Oh, well, come on. Where's the Fiat at?
I don't think, I don't really know.
Okay.
I know that it seems like, be totally honest, James.
Yeah.
Any other week, I'd probably, bother to go find it, but right now I'm just like,
okay.
I'm going to let this one slide.
That's cool. That's allowed. That's allowed. All right. Okay. Competition's good. That's all I got to say.
But,
that was you?
Cool. What? No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can. Yep. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, which this may fall totally flat on you, but we're going to try it anyways. Let's see. Business Insider put together a list of books that inspired the tech's most influential people.
Yes.
Okay. So it's, I don't know, it's got 10, I think. So Jeff Bezos, you know who he is. He, not surprisingly, likes to read about 10 books a month.
Why? What does he do?
Yeah, it's, he sells stuff. He's a salesman. his favorites, he has two. The first one is Built to Last, Successful Habits of Visionary Companies by Jim Collins. Awesome book. And The Remains of the Day, which is a fictional novel. And he said that if you read The Remains of the Day, which is one of his favorite books, you can't help but come away and think, I just spent 10 hours living an alternate life and learned something about life and about regret.
Which one was that one?
Remains of the Day. Mm-hmm. The Remains of the Day.
Interesting. I asked because I read two books on my airplane flights instead of sleeping, which means I think I'm about ready to get another book.
Okay. All right. That one's good. That one is definitely good. I'm working through that C.S. Lewis space trilogy you got me.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It's awesome. It's, you know, normal C.S. Lewis, it makes you think really hard.
Yeah.
It's fiction. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's fiction. And,
yes.
But the way that it's just some of the arguments and things that you see happening, you're just like, what? It's crazy. Okay. Let's see here. Zappos CEO, Tony Heshi. I probably didn't say it right. He likes tribal leadership, leveraging natural groups to build a thriving organization. And he also likes Peak, how great companies get their mojo from Maslow, which is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then he also likes the happiness hypothesis, finding modern truth in ancient wisdom. Huh. Those are books. You're going to have to respond or something.
What? Are you there? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. All right.
You're
just listening. Is that the deal?
Well, I was about to start talking. I was going to say, I don't recognize any of these books as the problem.
Okay. All right. I get nervous because I'm like, are you still there?
I know. I wish I could. I'm thinking, man, I should read all these books. They probably are really good. I mean,
they probably are.
When smart people tell you, this is a book that made me think about things that are important to me, it's usually good to perk up and pay attention.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. Bill Gates. He's had some success, I think. Not with the IE11, but we don't give him credit for that. So he likes, what is it? The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. And he says that it's a long but profound look at the reduction in violence and discrimination over time.
Wow.
And then he also likes, you'll like this, The Catcher in the Rye. It's like,
nice.
It's classic good. Right there, Billy Gates. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of some website place out there. You're going to love this.
This one's my fave. I actually knew this.
Yep, his favorite is Ender's Game.
I don't blame him.
By Orson Scott Card.
Yeah, that's a good choice. It's a good choice, boy.
He also said that he, because that's listed on his Facebook profile, but he also told the New Yorker a few years ago that he likes the Aeneid by Virgil. I probably said that wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Ender's Game, it's highly good. I'll see the movie when it comes out.
Can't wait.
Let's see here. The New York City Mayor, Michael Bloomberg, who you were in New York for 45 minutes, so you kind of...
It's true. This. Barely.
He likes The Honorable Schoolboy, but it's like 600 pages and mostly description.
Yeah.
And there's almost nothing that happens, but it's fascinating. Hey, why'd you drop? What's the deal? So, hopefully he'll join us again. We'll see. In the meantime, we'll keep going. And he'll just miss out on this. This one's not surprising at all. He'll miss the reaction. But Oracle's Larry Ellison, he likes the book Napoleon, of course, because he likes to take over things like crazy. And he says that it's an interesting to read for him for a couple of reasons. Number one, to see how a man of modest birth can, you know, to see how, what is it, a man of modest birth, he could do anything in his life, pretty much. And then to also see how, I like this one, how history can distort the truth entirely, which is just funny that he says it. I like it. Another one, Timmy Cook. He likes competing against time, which I don't know what it's about, but they know that he really likes it because he hands out copies to Apple employees. I should probably look into that one. I'm going to write that down. Competing against time. Sounds good. And then Elon Musk. Sorry, Matthew. You're going to miss out on this because you're not here. But apparently he reads thousands of books. But he really likes... And are you back?
Yeah, Chrome crashed on me.
Oh,
not my internet.
Okay,
yeah, which is not... It's and I'm nervous because I don't know why that happened, but it's actually not the first time that it's happened. My computer's freaking me out about it.
Well, you're just in time to hear what Elon Musk likes to
listen to. Oh, baby.
His, out of the thousands and thousands of books that he reads, number one, he enjoys the Lord of the Rings series. And
nice.
But his all-time favorite is Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yep.
That's awesome.
And then, and his biggest takeaway from that one was the question is harder than the answer. And when we ask questions, they come along with our biases. You should really ask, is this the right question? And that's hard to figure out.
Wow, that's a really deep way to look at a really ridiculously goofy book.
Oh, you know, would you expect anything less?
No, actually, none of you. When you put it that way, not really.
That's
funny.
The founder of Square, Jack Dorsey. He also done stuff with Twitter and whatever. You know, he really likes the Checklist Manifesto and actually gives that away as part of his welcome kit to new hires. So
nice.
He must like it. I don't know. The other one that I actually wrote down was by Tim Cook, Competing Against Time, which is another one that he tends to hand out to people. So I'm like, okay, all right. Smart guys. I'm going to check them out. And then according to Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, he listed William Shakespeare's King Lear, Plato, Clayton Christensen's Innovator's Dilemma, and then Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, and an autobiography of Yogi. And
Bobby of course, he couldn't do anything like entertaining and simple.
Yeah, and he also likes Secrets of the Little Blue Box.
Nice. Nice.
So there you go.
A story about
I think that's all of them. But there you go, man. Those are the books that people like. P.S., by the way, I guess the other one that you missed was Larry Ellison. He likes books about Napoleon. Like how an ordinary man can do great things, and then how and how history gets distorted. Like, yeah, you would like that one.
Yeah, it's not surprising, Mr. Ellison.
But there you go. Funny. Those are influential books that... No, how do I want to say it? Those are books that influenced influential people.
Nice, which makes them influential books.
That they are.
That's cool. I like that. I'll have to peruse that list more carefully. And
yeah, I added a few to my wish list after reading that. I was like, okay, yeah.
I'll have to try to wade my way through some of the shorter, easier to read vert ones.
Which is why we're here.
Yeah.
we like online news articles. They're easy to
exactly. Yeah, if it's got a really good title that pretty much sums up the entire article, that's actually
even
the best.
Better. Which TechCrunch used to do punny titles, and now they just do massively descriptive titles.
Yeah, because like, they realize that a lot of times it's all people read.
Well, it's got to fit into a Twitter thing, right? And you got to be able to be like, okay, right. I got it all, and you know, and go. Which I'm kind of sad. I miss the days of the punny titles.
I know.
You know, whatever.
We still try to do goofy titles just for
like,
our audience's sake.
That's right, we do. You kind of have to listen to get it. What was one of them? Oh, here was one of them. This is a title, okay? A title. Okay. From the team behind Branch, Potluck is a new link-sharing service for the internet's lurkers who don't tweet or blog.
Huh.
That's a title.
That's kind of like your who, what, where, and when all in one.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I guess that's one of the things about the internet, right? Is things go faster and faster. And normally that would be the lead, the first sentence.
Right.
Let's just make that the title. Let's not worry about it. Like, okay.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you know, I guess it's working for people, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Now that they're no longer owned by an independent guy who crows about how awesome he is, they, start to judge how well they're doing.
Yeah, they've vanillified a little bit.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you get bought by a behemoth of a company. Which
that's
I don't
true.
Know, does
we,
AOL
we bought
count?
Them again?
Yeah, AOL's big, right? They count, they're big.
Yeah, they're growing a little bit.
I don't know.
They're on the rise.
Big.
They are. No, they're well. Their stock is going up, and we almost talked about it like a month and a half ago. Them and
AOL
Yahoo
came out with a reader.
Shocked.
I mean, so they
it's true.
They clearly, you know,
they're trying to get in the game. Is tomorrow the first?
It is.
Oh my gosh! I have to do that tonight. No, I don't. That's right. I remembered to sign up for what's it called?
Feedly. But you still okay. I was gonna get this at the very end, but I will do it now. Reminder. Google Reader is closing tonight.
Yeah.
Like, there's no apologies. Okay. So here's what you need to do: two things. Number one, sign up for something. I chose Feedly. It's one click import. Dig. I signed up for that. It's okay. It's still very rough and beta-like. I didn't sign up for the AOL one. I haven't tried any others. Flipboard, I really like, and they say that it will just magically keep going. I guess. I don't know. I think Feedly is the winner because of the API part of it. And eventually, I really hope that Flipboard adds them because then I'll just be happy, happy, happy. But anyways, you also need to go to your Google Reader settings, export, import, do the export thing, and it takes you to Google Takeout, and it munches through it all, and you download a zipped file. And inside that zip file are all of your feeds and everything, and then specifically an XML file called subscriptions that has all of your subscriptions listed out by the title, or by your folder, by the title, and the actual feed itself. That document is the document you need if you're going to import it into another service. Super important. Hold on to it. Yeah.
It's really awesome that we're gonna post this podcast tomorrow morning. So everybody's going to be sitting there going, oh, so this is what I should have done last night.
Yeah, great. We won them last week. You know, I don't feel
it's
bad.
True.
I don't feel bad.
It's true. It's true. I don't feel bad either. I'm just glad that I didn't forget. So
we'll rephrase this.
Yeah.
Good job for saving your feeds. We applaud you for doing it. You are awesome.
For doing what we just recommended. Yay!
Yay!
Good times. So I actually had like a cool transition planned out, but I don't remember what it was anymore. So I'm just gonna jump right into it because I want to talk about it. So iOS 7, Johnny Ive's new baby got announced last week, and basically he gave the whole thing a paint job and then tried to convince us that it was really cool. And when obviously it was just a new paint job, and everybody's
ago, right?
Like, psh. Was it 2 weeks ago? I don't remember, James. I've lived 3-4 days in the last day, so it could have been a month ago as far as I can tell at this point.
Okay.
Or, you know, yesterday, really. So anyways, you know, new iOS came out and talking about different things that are going on with it behind the scenes. And I've been reading more and kind of getting into, like, you know, what's going on and why is this kind of – is it a big deal? If it is, why is it a big deal?
Yeah.
And it's kind of – it's cool. It's very cool. And basically the consensus is that two things are going – or like they designed this new operating system and there's a couple of different like components that go into like – how they design it. Like on one hand, I think we talked about this last week, but the idea that the color scheme that they chose for like the icons and stuff, people are like, you know, when they look at like the new operating system, it just is like, it's so colorful and kitty and just kind of rainbowy and it's just too bright for a lot of people to handle. And there's been some complaints about the overall design, to which anybody who's like ever used iOS goes, who uses a vanilla app screen, you know, unchanged? Like everybody changes their background picture and they move around all their icons and it evolves to take on whatever tone you want it to take on.
Right.
If you want it to be dark, you put dark stuff in, it's dark. If you want it to be bright, you put bright stuff in the background.
By the way, here's my current lock screen.
I can't look at it, so you'll have to let everybody...
Oh, it is a Man of Steel poster.
Nice.
On my lock screen.
My lock screen right now? Can you see me?
Nope. Wait, if you talk, yes.
Yes, okay.
Oh, no, I can't. You're like a little circle. What'd you do?
Right. I turned off my video so that I'm
not trying to. No, I can't see you at all.
I have a picture of Will Ferrell and what's his name? John C. Reilly from Step Brothers posing together all nice for my lock screen picture.
I like it.
But I would say so a lot of people and so they asked like, well, why was it so bright? And what was really interesting to me is, you know, generally in the past, as they've designed iOS, it's been, you know, obviously Scott Forstall was kind of in charge of it all, along with Steve Jobs. But they would do all the design work, like, within the operating system team. The designers would design what the app icons would look. Well, this time, Johnny Ives basically handed it over to the marketing department and said, design these so that they look pretty. Because as far as he's concerned, the stock iOS apps and background, it's all marketing. So he was like, well, you guys just take care of it. Do whatever will make it easiest to market, and then we'll make that the standard because everybody will change it right away, which makes a lot of sense to me.
Interesting.
But they went through and they did a couple of things that everybody's like really, you know, that they mentioned on stage, but they didn't – I don't think it really set in to exactly how impressive it is. They did things like the, you know, like the gray – or not the gradients, but the transparent keyboard and everything overlays on top of everything. And they – and the subtle parallaxing or as you – rock the phone back and forth, the app will or the icons will actually move left and right to show you what's going on behind them, so you get that subtle perspective shift that you're supposed to get. So they talk about little things like that they've done, and asking the question of like, what does this do? And one of the big things that you get from this, which is kind of interesting, cool, is that it gives you the it gives you the dimensionality that a lot of people are whining about with Windows 8 specifically, that you don't have. Everything's too flat, and things don't pop out enough and pop over, and you don't really know where things are in relation to other things. It's like, you know, your most important panel is your desktop, and it's always behind everything. And in the iPhone, it's your home screen, and everything pops up over top of the home screen. Well, if with like Android, especially early Android, instead of having graphics that would show it expanding, the app page expanding out over top, or as you rotated the phone, showing the rotation animation of the screen, it would just pop into place. It pop full screen or pop, yeah, you know, changed. And the reason that they would do that is because it takes a tremendous amount of graphics processing power, yeah, to do those things. And Apple would basically gave themselves extra processing power to be able to do that. And because they build all their own silicon, they do all those things nowadays in hardware accelerated fashions, which essentially allows them to build these custom graphics that work alongside custom silicon to look really, really, really cool and be very difficult to replicate, because it's not as simple, and we've talked about this before, in the difference between iOS and Android, specifically in like touch sensitivity. And it's difficult for Android to do it, because in order to achieve the same effect with the same fluidity and the same style, they have to use way more processing power. And so they have to build way more powerful phones in order to achieve the same effect. So if they are all competing for the same level of power, Apple has extra bandwidth in the end that they can do other tasks with on your iPhone. So the overall performance is way higher. And essentially what they were saying is this does a couple of things. Number one, they say what actually the biggest thing that this does is not so much, it doesn't really force Android or Google or Samsung to chase after Apple. They've got their own design teams. They're doing their own things. They've got their own, you know, and so there's not as big of a concern there. Right. But what they were saying is, and this is what's awesome, is the developers, there's going to be this new, like, mini gold rush within the App Store to be the first person to get your stuff to, you know, your app to match the new Apple style. And if you've got like a calculator app, and there's, you know, 700 different calculator apps out there, but you're the first one that matches the new iOS 7 and uses the new design APIs and stuff to look cool, you're going to get a bunch of downloads. And so they're talking about how this is basically, you know, going to open the Pandora's box of app developers. And I thought it was kind of funny that this title that is literally called Apple May Have Opened Pandora's Box. And I clicked on it thinking that I was going to read about Apple Radio, which is essentially a competitive service to Pandora. And it had nothing to do with the music service of Pandora. I was like, wow. That's,
suckered you in.
Yeah, that title was confusing. But it's a good article still. They talk about the fact that, and rightly so, that like, you know, the iOS is going to have, or developers are just going to go, you know, nuts trying to catch up with Apple in their design metaphors and their skeuomorphism and everything. And so there's going to be a real move to, especially like your big time, you know, app developers like Twitter and Facebook. They've got all their cool stuff that they do, but they're going to want to at least slowly incorporate new graphic functions to make it all look right, since it's the biggest platform out there. And the biggest thing about this, or what's interesting, you know, and what that's going to do is it essentially takes time away from developers who may have had an app that they were slowly upgrading, or they hadn't really touched in, you know, a year or two. All of a sudden, they've got to completely redesign the UI in order to keep up with the modern UI, so somebody else doesn't develop an app that does essentially the same thing but looks new and modern. So everybody's going to go get all competitive. And the problem is that since iOS is the number one platform for distributing apps, all app developers prioritize iOS first. And so essentially, as the new Android app or new version of Android comes out, which is in and of itself a big change and a big diverging shift from old Android, and one of the big moves that they're making is to really slim it down and make it simpler and kind of streamline it and unify it and everything. So both companies are releasing these big packages that are going to require a lot of time and effort on developers to modernize their apps, and everybody's going to spend all their time on Apple first. And so they're basically like, they're going to kill a development cycle for Google or for Android apps. It's going to be awesome.
I read an article 2 weeks ago that was talking it. They're like, from a game standpoint, it actually made sense for them to develop on Android first, just because it was bigger for the downloads, and they were making the same amount of money per app. Since they had more apps on Android, they're like, it actually makes sense for us to focus on Android over iOS.
They're claiming that statistic is finally turned.
Well, for that particular development group, yes.
Do you know who it was?
But it's in the article list from a couple weeks ago. I don't remember.
Okay.
But it was a game of some sort. It was a more serious game, if I remember correctly, that had in-app purchases was how they did it. And they've made like 5 or 6 of them, and they're like, yeah, it's pretty consistent is what we've seen. So for at least that style of game, they're like, Android... They were just saying it's not that Android users spend more; it's they now spend the same amount, and because there's more of them out there, it
makes sense.
The absolute number is greater. They did say that whatever development kit they used to made it fairly easy, and because of the style of app as well, it made it fairly easy for them to kind of cover all the big Android bases. Plus, with most of them now are Samsung, you kind of develop for that one.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. If you develop for the Galaxy and for the Nexus, you do the
HTC One, Samsung, Galaxy series, Nexus, you're covered for the most part.
Yeah,
and which makes sense to me. From Apple's standpoint, it's like you got to do the 4, the 5, and. You know, and maybe a non-Retina one. I don't know. Because the Mini just... Anyways, if you want to have an iPad, obviously that's different. Tablet's different on Android as well, I guess. But anyways, they're just saying for them, it made sense to put the resources toward Android first and do that. And because a lot of the... Well, actually... they had another argument, which I thought was super interesting, actually, was... to actually develop on Apple first, because it was a single platform, pretty, you know, it's technically easier to get going. Figure out all your bugs, figure out what works and what doesn't work, use Apple as your test group, and then once you've kind of got your app locked in and you're like, okay, we know we got this, then rewrite it for Android using, you know, all the learnings that you have from iOS on the bigger group.
Right.
So if you, quote, mess up, it's on the smaller group.
Really?
And development's a little bit faster because it's just, you know, you just like, you go iPhone only, you know. And
right. Which is what a lot of, I mean, that's what Instagram and did and companies similar.
Yeah, and you watch them like, and I think Vine was the same way where, they start out pretty, you know, at a reasonable speed. And they're growing. And then they release it for Android and it's like, and we tripled in a day. You know, and part of that is they've already got the word of mouth, the momentum, people have been waiting for it, so there's that built-in pent-up demand, I suppose. But then it's also they've figured out, okay, these are the features that people want, that they don't want, and, you know, and from a download percentage, it probably would be the same, but because there's just more, it looks to be more. So there was, because for a while there, the belief was, and Angry Birds was really the first one to do this, where it was like, oh, well, iOS users are willing to pay, and so we'll charge for that app. Android users are not, and so we'll do that free-to-play or, you know, in-app downloads. And what they found is both of them they're now very similar, and in-app purchases is by far and away the way to go. Because you get the volume of downloads that's needed, and to get you into the top 10 lists and, you know, things like that. That was the other part takeaway that they had, which was like, make a really good app and get listed by Apple or Android, you know, or get featured, like, because that's when you start to make gangster money.
And, right.
Because before then, you're like, hey.
Makes sense.
It'll be a fun part-time gig.
Right.
Which means there's still a problem with app discovery on both of them.
Right. You know. And I'm on Podcast Discover, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It's near and dear to our hearts. Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess the biggest takeaway from all of this, and the article was that was titled, and this is basically that summed up kind of the biggest changes that Apple and Google made to both of their operating systems. The article was summed how Apple and Google turned summer vacation or what? Sorry, how Apple and Google ruined summer vacation for developers.
That's true.
I don't think there's ever been a summer vacation for developers because Apple and Google always release their new operating system.
You know when the Worldwide Developer Conference is way ahead of time. That's no surprise.
But both of them released giant sweeping changes either to the fundamental structure of how they want apps to run or to the fundamental structure of how their UI works, which both are going to require overhauls.
I'm gonna say this right now. I will only buy the next iPhone because I'm pretty happy with my 4S. The way that Apple will get me to upgrade, haptic touchscreen. That's the only way.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
I know exactly.
That's not gonna happen.
I know, but I want them to. So
basically, you're saying
I'm putting it out there as official. That's what I want because that'll also ruin developers' lives because you'll have a total new, you know, plane interaction.
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
A new dimension. Awesome. I'm just excited for parallaxing, which I can get on the iPhone 5 and will gladly. I don't care about
why
that.
Why is that so cool? Yeah, I don't get it. Why are you like, that's so amazing, I love it?
I've always thought it was a really, really cool effect. I used to play Sonic the Hedgehog and just like run back and forth on the screen. Just to watch the background parallax back and forth. I don't know. I just think it's a really, really cool effect. Really excited. The early Android had, like, as you, like, flip through the screen, you could do the extended background that would, like, cover, like, three planes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it would, like, it would move slowly, but it wouldn't move totally behind the icons. I always thought that looked awesome. And I was, like, totally bummed that Apple didn't have that sort of a thing. I don't know. I like it when the apps float above the pictures and you can see. I realize it's kind of dumb and it's gimmicky. And the reason why it's impressive, and the only reason why it's impressive is because, well, I actually think it's a good metaphor that will help people. Like, it just reinforces the idea of, you know, the layered panes of the new operating system. And it's a good design metaphor, and it helps really reinforce that idea. It looks cool, and it requires a humongous amount of processing power or really, really well-built integrated graphics cores. And so it's going to be a unique feature to iOS. So,
do you think that'll drain the battery much as a result of it?
No. No. I don't think they would. For your phone, maybe.
Do I even get it?
I don't know. You might not. Because the 5 has the dual core integrated graphics cores. So mine's cool enough. I probably will. But
it's okay. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's cool, and I look forward to see the people go, oh man, look at this. This is awesome. It's great. I don't know. It's funny. I think I'm starting to understand why it's a bigger deal in a more subtle way. I think it'll really help improve the new feel to it. It'll feel cool. It's kind of like the whole, what's it called? Momentum scrolling and snap scrolling and stuff. It was like those things were important and sold iPhones when it was just like, it's kind of like, is it really that important a feature? But people loved it, and, you know, Google was willing to go to court to try to, you know, to take it from them. So, obviously it was worth something. But cool. I like it. So it has been a while since we've talked about this, and I think it's time that we bring it back up and remind ourselves the fact that BlackBerry is going to die soon. They are Blackberry. On the way out.
I can't remember.
How
does the Wall Street Journal get it wrong and they call them RIM? Oops.
I know. Yeah. That was a bad job, guys. Basically,
in the paragraph they get it right. I don't understand here. RIM's playbook.
Well, maybe they're saying RIM's playbook because it was technically RIM that launched it. I don't know. That seems like a stretch.
They're talking about the BlackBerry 10. Then a lot of analysts exactly what RIM was doing. The tablet was the tablet device was launched amid much fanfare, but fell after its initial operating system didn't allow users to send emails, a vital service given BlackBerry's strength in that part of the smartphone market.
I forgot that. I had forgotten that.
RIM said it. Man, they keep going back and forth between who they are. Oh, well. Shoddy reporting is what that is. Come on, Wall Street Journal. So you should know better.
Basically, first big piece of news, the playbook, obviously, was what we're talking about. The death knell for the playbook was rung this week. Basically, they're not selling or making them anymore, but they've also announced that they're not going to create a version of BlackBerry 10 to be loaded onto the playbook, which means that there's absolutely no development going on for the playbook within the company, which is to say, if you have one, it is now a fully abandoned product, and you should blend it or throw away or do something with the piece of trash.
Oh, I feel sorry for that. This is sort of a bought one last quarter. Oops.
Yeah. Good job. That's just, oh man, what a complete and horrendous mess they made. The other thing is that basically, BlackBerry, they're selling their Z10s and all their cool phones, with like full touchscreens and stuff, really trying to make some movement. And although their keyboarded phones are still selling to a degree, their touchscreen phones are just not selling at all. And since that's the market that's growing, that was really looked at as a major, major worrisome note for the Canadian company. And so their stock plummeted this week on both of those.
What are they down to? Let's see. Went down 20% there at 10:46. HP was once lower, so they still got room to fall.
And that's true. I mean, they're not a penny stock yet. Yay! It's something to be proud of, I guess. I can't remember. What did we say? What's our prediction on this one? One of us said they were going to die this year, and another one said
you thought they would die, and I massively backpedaled and said that they'd probably hang on.
Yeah. I hate the fact that it's looking like you're right at this point. I mean, they're still doing terrible, but it's not. The rumblings for a buyout haven't started yet, and their stock hasn't slid quite to the point where people are jumping off ship completely. So it looks like they still might have a chance to make it through the year. But I'll stick with my prediction, I guess.
Nah, they're gonna stick around. They've made it halfway through the year.
Yeah, it's true.
While losing money, so. I guess it is possible that some company comes in under the, cloak of night and just kind of sweeps them up. But
come back to, but who would do that and why would you do that?
Exactly.
So,
of course, for a while there, we were talking about the same thing for HP. They seem to turn around.
Yeah.
I hope. Well, again, HP, what I understand, was in a different position. It was never actually losing money. It just wasn't growing as much. Which, if you're a stockholder, still feels the same. Whereas, BlackBerry is actually losing money, and not a small amount.
Yeah. You can only survive for so long doing that. I mean, there comes a day where, as the quote goes, things that can't continue won't. So, It has to end at some point. They either need to start making money or they're going to go under, and it seems highly unlikely that they're going to start making money at some point. So,
yeah, especially when you think about, like, he's already done, what'd they say, he's cut like $1 billion in costs, and you know, by he cut like 5,000 jobs and eliminated 6 of their 10 manufacturing sites, even sold one of their corporate jets, which, like, okay, big deal. But yeah. You know, so it's kind of like, okay, you have cut a ton of stuff and you've come out with new products and you're still losing money. That's a really, yeah, really, really bad combination. You know, it's like, right. You know, it's nice to go, oh, well, we made cuts so we're not falling as much. Like, okay, good. We just wait for our new stuff, which is NHP's line.
We've extended the runway, as the term goes.
Yeah. And then once we get new products out there, we won't care about the runway because we'll be profitable, life will be good, awesome, whatever. Well, the products are out there, and
you're still running out of runway.
Yeah, so you're kind of like, what's your next play? Oh, wait, hold on for the next one. We got this. That was just a warm-up act. No, 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 no.
You're losing money too fast. You got to turn it around, and now. I mean, it's you know, the runway analogy is perfect. You're running out of runway, and you're barreling down. You either take off or you crash. You can't – what do you – you know. You're out of money. What the heck, guys?
They're living La Vida Loca right now. Now, I agree with you that, I don't know, they're not going to, they don't have any long-term prospects. I just think this year is too fast for them. They're not falling fast enough, which I don't get.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They're talking about, like, their share. It's now at 2.9%. Where a year ago it was at 6.4, and it just keeps going. But again, I think you get a situation, who would buy them? HP bought Palm, and that turned out horribly. I've got to imagine any other company out there is just like, no thanks. I mean, you think about Google, they bought Motorola. They're like, they got their whole deal going on, and Motorola was already doing Android devices anyways, and that still seems to be taking forever and a day for them to do their thing. Microsoft, if they're going to buy anybody, it's going to be Nokia, and they don't seem in any rush to do that, so I don't know why they would buy a BlackBerry. HP clearly is getting into bed with Android and ignoring, I don't know. I just don't see any exit for them. Other than they're going to try, and I like this strategy a little bit. I don't think they can make any money in it, but they're like, well, we're going to put our services on all the other devices and kind of, reinvigorate BlackBerry. And then the message will be, yeah, you can use BlackBerry anywhere, but it works the best on our devices. So don't worry about it. And, so you don't feel like you're out in the cold, per se.
But they still haven't convinced me to move over to BlackBerry messaging. I mean, like, what's so great about BlackBerry messaging over...
It's secure.
Well, yeah, jeez, that's just...
Which, from what we have learned, nothing is secure, so...
Exactly. A, nothing is secure. B, B, iMessage is secure enough where they allow you to use it for the SEC, and, I don't know. It's funny. The, somebody... What was it? If... whatever thought that was, it just went away. It's not coming back.
Hey, you know what? It's okay. I love bashing BlackBerry. I'm going to miss them when they're gone.
Yeah. Well, we'll just pick on the next target.
Until then, we will ride them out. Who do you think the next target is?
Nokia,
yes. We're just boom, 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 firing squad.
Yeah, man.
Love it. That's so funny.
I know where my bloodlust turns. I want bigger and badder coming, It's Palm was a good warm up. They were Behemoth, but they weren't as big and burly as BlackBerry, but nobody's been as big as Nokia. The fall from grace on that one's just too delicious. I mean, it looks like they might actually save themselves, but at this point, I'm not holding out hope for them too much.
That's so funny. All right. Nokia, next.
Yeah.
I love it, man. Already got your whipping boy lined up. That's so funny. Oh, man. I love it.
Yeah. So I wanted to be the first ones to break some cool new pieces of scientific discovery and engineering to y'all's.
All right, lay it on me.
I think this is cool. So number one, there's been a breakthrough in plasmonics, which if you don't know what that is, what have you been doing with your life? I don't know what plasmonics are either, to be honest. They're this this weird physics effect that occurs somewhere in between a particle and a wave, and which is all quantum-y and sort of exciting. I'll read it directly from the article to kind of give you a little bit of a – yeah. So basically, scientists have discovered how optical signal transmission can be controlled paving the way for the integration of plasmonics with conventional electronic circuits. What? Okay, that sounds cool. What does that mean to me? When light hits the metal under certain circumstances, it generates a density wave of the electrons on its surface, like throwing a stone in water. The wave is called a plasmon, and it is a small and rapid occurring at optical frequencies. Plasmonics, the study of plasmons, has gained tremendous interest worldwide as it might be offer a way to bridge electronic and optical circuits in technologies like computers, creating super fast processors. So basically what's going on is one of the things that we've been looking for as an industry for a long time. It's known that really one of the next moves in developing the next generation of computer chip is to move away from electrons as the carrier signal and move over to optics and
right.
really build an optical.
I could see that. You know,
there's like, yeah. Well, they're super fast and they're you know, light obviously travels at, you know, the speed of light and it doesn't generate very much heat compared to electrons because there's basically no resistance. It's pretty cool in that it's really low power. It's incredibly high speed traveling through the circuit. And so what you can do is you can just pump it with a bunch of stuff. And once again, the only real restraint is how many transistors can you fit into a molecule. Well, but the big question here is how do you build a light transistor? We know how to build electron transistors. It's pretty standard technology. It is what everything is based on, is the transistor. And so if you can build a light transistor, well, how would you do that? And what this is it's sort of a theoretical way to do that. And it has some strange advantages that are more – to be totally honest, I am not super familiar with what plasmonics are. I haven't watched one of those cool Nova documents. They do interesting graphics with one of the rock stars of physics explaining what it is in an easy to understand way. But basically, from what I'm gathering, it allows you to easily move between light photons and electrons along the metals, and they retain a lot of the wave properties, so it allows you to send stuff, receive and send fiber or send light, receive and send photons more easily. And one of the things they're also talking about, the idea is that fiber optics obviously are a huge, a huge part of our infrastructure. Fiber optics are kind of bulky and difficult to handle. And so the other thing they're talking about here is that it might be possible using the same physics effect to be able to build fiber optics that don't require plastics, that can be made out of these different types of metals.
Okay.
Weird. I'm so confused on how they're able to do all this, but They assure me that it's possible, but it's like they like skip light it along, along metal. They call it light on a wire. So I don't know. It sounds pretty cool. It sounds pretty exciting. And I what?
Yeah, that's cool. Oh, that's awesome. That's all. It's just reacting. Oh boy, I'm losing you, dude. Or not. It's hard to tell. Oh boy.
Hi, May. Hello. Can you hear
okay,
me?
You're back. Oh boy.
Okay. Cool. Your network connectivity is experiencing difficulties. Check your connectivity.
Gotta go talk to your hotel man. Be like, what's with you guys in? What'd you say you are, Lincoln?
Yeah, dude. I'm paying £8.5 for this garbage. Come on now.
You're not personally, right? I just want to double check.
No.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's covered by.
Just checking. Speaking of who's paying for stuff, who's buying your new clothes? Nobody. You're out. So, this is a bummer. Matthew is currently in the United Kingdom in the city of Lincoln hanging out in a hotel, which is why he's apparently having problems. But it also sounds like his luggage had a little bit of problems getting there too. So I was just asking him who's paying for his luggage since he didn't quite make it. Are you back? Yes. I heard you say, Well, I think that might be a sign, and we will take that sign as that.
Oh, man.
Hey, man, you're cutting in and out. I think we're going to call it, dude.
Oh, no. I'm fighting it. This is driving me nuts. Okay. Well.
All right. But plasmonics sound awesome. Keep doing research. I want to hear more about it in future weeks as you watch your Nova special or, you know, whatever it is. So, everybody, thanks for joining us. We hope that you enjoy your 4th of July and you're able to get some barbecues or do some work or something like that. Hopefully, again, by the time you're listening to this, you will have already moved your Google Reader stuff over to something else. And we'll just say good job. Good job for remembering. Other than that, have a great week. Thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, my brother, who is no longer with us, but literally physically not in the U.S. and not on the podcast anymore. He says goodbye as well. So with that, everybody, we will talk next time.